Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Teyama, food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deeper understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Yoshiki Yukimachi, the sixth generation brewmaster of Takeno Brewery in Kyoto. Founded in 1947, Takeno Brewery has not only been a producer of high-quality sake, but also known for its innovative mindset. Yoshiki's father, Yoshihei Yukimachi, initiated the transformation of the brewery strategy and introduced unique products under the Krabu brand, which features ancient sake rice. Also, Yoshiki has produced creative products and put Takeno Brewery's name in the global market. The Japanese sake market has been shrinking domestically due to various reasons like aging population in Japan, the increase in competitive products, but the sake exports has been record high in recent years, thanks to the efforts and inventive mindsets of sake producers like Takeno Brewery. So today we'll discuss Takeno Brewery's unique sake making philosophy, the award-winning sake Takeno makes with the rare sake rice varieties, the pioneering ways to taste sake at Takeno Brewery's sake bar, how Yoshiki merges deep traditions and innovative ideas in his products, and much, much more. But before we start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We truly appreciate your feedback. Now let's start a conversation with Yoshiki Yukimachi. Hello, Yoshiki. Welcome to the show.
Wow. Thank you. Hi, Yoshiki. Oh, すごいね.
すごい. Yeah, because one of our listeners who seems to know a lot about sake asked if we could have you on the show. So I'm very excited to have you here. So thank you for coming. Hey, so first of all, to get to know you, you were born and raised at a sake brewery in Kyoto, of course, Takenoshi.
Oh, yeah.
So what did you eat when you grew up?
I eat what my mother and grandmother cooked for me, and also it's traditional Japanese food, and very close to the sea, my place.
Right. So sounds like you really grew up in a very ideal, traditional, authentic Japanese setup, and now you are making global sake. That's interesting. So, and you became the sixth generation brewmaster of Takeno Brewery 14 years ago in 2009. So when did you decide to succeed your family business in the first place?
Discovered the excellence of sake in Tokyo, 21 years old. I go to Tokyo, so find very good sake. So I love sake. And go back house. So now making sake.
Interesting. You had to rediscover what your family is doing. You became It told you when you were 25, I think. So it's amazing that how you were surrounded by the best sake, Kori sake, when you grew up, but then you have to go, come back. But you really picked the right time and at the young age to succeed in family business. And so your father, Yoshihei Yukimachi, is the president, and you are the brewmaster. And I heard your brothers are working with you, right?
Two brothers, yeah.
Two brothers, Tatsuro and Kohei-san.
So very, very good luck. And so we together, and so normally, and so fighting. We work together. So making sake, so very freestyle. So we work midnight and early morning. So sometimes no lunch, no breakfast is okay. So we. Brother, so very flexible.
Right. Yeah. Some family businesses do not work that cohesively. So that's amazing. Right. Okay. So what is the history of your family sake brewery, Take no Shizo?
It has a history of about 150 years, so sixth generation. So my family is also 350 years, so 16th generation. So sixth generation starts making sake.
Mm-hmm. So you were you're sixth generation, but what I heard for many reasons, the original sake brewery had to close, and that you had to reopen with other sake breweries, the four breweries, and that's what you're working on. That's called sake Take no Shizo. But the original history of your sake brewery goes back to Edo period, which is from. Right? That's a very, very long history. So you have a good blood of sake making beyond six generations, which is amazing.
Yeah. I think so.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, but you know, we're going to discuss it, but you know, going back to 17th, 18th century, and now sake is still going and it's becoming more energy. Thanks to places like you, someone like you, forward-minded sake brewer, is replacing, redefining the sake in the global market. So this is very exciting. So what is the philosophy of sake making at Take no Brewery? And it seems to be you committed to be part of a local community and building a strong identity and terroir as the region of Kyoto as well. So what is the philosophy of sake making?
Very, very difficult question. So before is very now. So we will deliver so peace to the world with sake. But I think before is different, so very local business and very local place is.
Right. So what I read and studied, because I was so passionate about your sake brewery, there's a lot, so many interviews and the other media coverage about how Take no Brewery wants to contribute to be a community, and you want to maintain your identity as a regional sake brewery and stay connected to the members of community. So you have a lot of community events and charities and try to create sort of a terroir, which is wine term, but which really summarizes all those characteristics from climate to soil, geography, everything, and water, of course, for the sake. And then a person who makes, that's a part of the terroir. So to me, take no shizo is not just making quality sake. It's a kind of a cheerleader of Kyoto region sake making, and also, of course, Japanese sake industry overall. So I think the philosophy seems to be, when we talk about sake itself, is more kind of technically different, but also the mindset of trying to create a community, which I think is also historically very important for the sake history. So, yeah, it was very impressive when I went all those media coverage. Okay, so I heard that Take no Shuzo used to make very standard sake, but the direction shifted in early 2000s. So why did your strategy change?
My father, so important and individuality is very important. So brewing is so he also started using special rice with old DNA. My father is so very long time so thinking, and met him one rice farmer. So he have a very old so rice. We grow up and old rice. So this area. In this area, so
yeah. So what I heard also is that so the sake consumption, like I mentioned earlier, has been declining domestically overall because of the aging population, to competitive products, all those things. But then your father, forward-minded father, decided to change something because the market is shrinking. You have to really explore a new way to sell. But you have to be different to be able to stand out in a competitive, domestically still competitive market. So, and then you happen to find or receive ancient sake rice. And there you go, your amazing forward-minded father decided to pursue that very rare path to revive that sake rice and just change to shift the whole strategy. And at this point, it didn't just shift the strategy, but also like inspiring other parts of the sake industry as well. So that's amazing. All right. So we'll discuss the ancient right after the break. So we'll take a quick break here and we'll continue our conversation. So please stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on HRN, Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Akiko Teyama, and my guest today is Yoshiki Yukimachi, who is the sixth generation brewmaster of Takeno Brewery in Kyoto. Founded in 1947, Takeno Brewery has been not only a producer of high-quality sake, but also known for its innovative mindset. And Takeno Brewery is known for producing award-winning sake that features rare rice varieties, which we mentioned quickly before the break. So could you tell us about the sake that you sell under the brand name Kurabu using the ancient rice?
Yeah. Kurabu was started by my father and is the most important brand for the company. We company. So Every year we focus on the rice and always try make the best. Yeah, of course.
Right. So this, if you go to the website, there are some labels you can find as Kurabu included many other, along with many other labels. But it's interesting that the rice that your father happened to receive, that's a kameno'o, is the rice that was a specific rice, just ancient rice, and also asahi. These are two rice varieties that was forgotten. So, yeah, so I'm sure these rare sake rice varieties can produce different kind of flavors. So how many labels do you have on the Kurabu right now?
Now, five, and ego, and some my brother original sake. And so all eight and different brand is we have.
Right. So okay. And well, we just keep mentioning us the sake rice that's called sakamai, and there are over 100 sakamai for sake production. That's counted under the Japanese administration of sake production. But the top two varieties called Yamada Nishiki and the 500 Mangoku accounts for 60% of the total sake rice actually used. So how important is it for you to use the rare sake rice varieties called Kameno'o and Asahi and some other new ones you try to use?
It's very important. We want to use rice, and that's how being so grew on. Our land and a long time and has a special flavor. Very important.
Right. So, for example, I'm looking at this Asahi Kurabu, Asahi Kurabu, that's the sake label. And the Asahi rice was really popular in Meiji era, but then it started to be less used. And it's a big rice, and you don't need much of fertilizer or anything. I'm talking about the natural fertilizer. So it's very popular. It used to be popular, but then the market demand changed, and eventually out of those 100 sake rice, some of them lose its popularity. The farmers stop making it, even if it's very precious and delicious. So I think what are you doing at the Takeno Brewery is trying to revive those potentially extinct rice to get the new life and introducing that charm to the world. So that's very exciting. So, okay. And as much as Takeno Brewery is committed to the local community, your sake is globally recognized. So, and you, as the sixth generation, you've been pushing the envelope of the definition of a sake. That's what I heard. For instance, I heard that you have introduced a new production method, which includes slow fermentation at the lower temperature for a longer period. So could you tell us about this new approach?
We used to make sake with only one type of bacteria. So, but now we fermented different bacteria together. It is very risky method. We have been type it since 2009, and finally, after 7 years, we have been type this method since 2009, and it's finally work too. So we ferment for very long parcel. Time is 250 days. So this sake need to be aged for 10 years. So now 5 years left. So so wow. Yeah. Yeah. So
wow, so it's not in the market yet?
Yeah, not it's yet.
What's the name of the label?
Not yet. So and after 5 years, so if you want, so let's drink. Yeah, together.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I'll come on, yeah. Come and see in Kyoto to share the bottle.
Yeah.
All right. So this fermentation slow at lower temperature, that means that you can maximize the flavor of the rice. Is that why you do it?
Yeah, I think so. So very low temperature and very high temperature mixed, and so very complicated fermentation. So 200, so normally sake is 2 months, so 60 days. So this sake is very, very different.
Right. Wow. Yeah. So is that something you came up with uniquely you wanted to maximize the flavor of the ingredients, so you decided to spend more time? Is that?
Yeah.
What? Wow. Okay. Well, I'll wait. So please let me know when you're ready. That's so exciting. Right. So it's interesting, though, that you always seem to be coming up with something new. So, yeah. By the way, what kind of rice do you use in this? What sake rice? Do you use the Kameno or Asahi or which?
So this rice is very secret. So, yeah.
Okay.
If you please come in.
Okay. So, well, I will plan a trip.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. This just mentioned that like Asahi that you use for Takeda. The Club brand. Yeah. So the first sake your father received from a scientist was it's called Kameno, so Tail of Taro. It's a cute name.
Yeah.
And so had 3 kilograms, and there's a very specific rice specifically developed, but then that's the 3 kilograms, that's almost like 6 pounds. And started everything. Your sake brewery changed thanks to this 3 kilos of sake rice coming out.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, that's your father is such a dreamer. You are too. And this is very exciting.
So, my father, grow up rice and so. Now, 3-4 years, 5 years ago. So Kameno is, evolved. So now we used to original rice. So rice name is Tang Kameno. So this rice is, we original rice only used to, so.
Right, so you work with a farmer who can develop that Tang Kameno. Wow, wait. So again, that's your community-driven sake production. So the your specific rice with working with the local farmers. That's another characteristics of Takeno Shuzo. All right. So, how would you like to position your sake in the global market, it is a uniquely Japanese product or something that you belong to the category of wine. You want to be seen as a wine, kind of wine. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not sure yet. We want to see what the market thinks. So wine customer is very enjoyable. We want to grow with them.
Right. Because I started to see sake and wine, kind of people started to overlap the way an opportunity to drink. Some sake is served at the French restaurant, and some wines are served at the sushi restaurant. And people started to appreciate because there's no clear-cut wine or sake. So I think your approach is really right. And the way you pay attention to, you know, the way to let people taste. For example, use the new product, Egao, that you can drink it as an aperitif, not just as sake, drinking with eating with food, which is a new idea of sake to drink even for Japanese people, right? Okay, so I'll keep watching how your sake is drunk and in which restaurant or what kind of food with, right? So, and you have a highly innovative tasting room called Bar 362 Plus 3, Bar 362 Plus 3.
Yeah.
So where you offer new ways to taste sake. So could you tell us why you opened this interesting bar in 2015 and what can visitors experience there?
We opened the tasting room so because we realized that there are not many places where you can enjoy sake in its best form. In our tasting room, you can try a wide variety of sake and all sake and very rare sake. So a lot of sake is what we have. So please come in.
Wait. Well, what I heard is you have a counter seat on the seated sofa, and then you serve in wine glass, right?
Original. Yeah, we made a wine glass. So this bar. Yeah.
So and it, again, you work with the local glass makers, which is another community-minded actions you've taken. So what's the point of serving sake in a bigger, Burgundy-style wine glass?
So oxidation is very important under temperature and, of course, smell. So very important. So we try 40-50 glass and tasting a lot. So my friend is making this glass.
So can we go visit?
Yes.
The brewery and then you can just So is that once a week or every week? How many days of the week? And do you know, because I'm sure listeners wants to come visit and try your sake with a specifically created a big wine glass. So I heard it's only Fridays.
Always.
Always. Okay.
Yeah.
So we come on and visit you then. Okay,
yeah.
That sounds great. Right. Okay. And so I know I heard you're working on a new product, which is sparkling sake.
Yeah.
So could you tell us about it and how different is it going to be from other sparkling sake?
I would like to have a tasting. I think carbonation and lactic acid and so diversity of other acids are different. So very different.
Right. So what I read is that the sake is called La Première Sake Petit Lan Yasaka Tsuru Nouveau.
Yes.
Premier Cuvée. So sounds like more for champagne approach to champagne's approach to sake. Mm. And then I also read that the power of fermentation is maximized. So do you double ferment? Like fermentation in the tank and the fermentation in the bottle as well, like champagne?
Of course, double fermentation. But so... And more, so fourth, fifth fermentation, we try, yeah.
Usually, you use one type of yeast to ferment. Instead of one type of yeast, but it packs the base with a lot of different kinds of yeast. So that sounds like there's a natural interaction between different yeasts, and that's going to create more powerful power to ferment. So this is basically, you have to select one beautiful type of yeast to finish the product, but based on the experience in the past of the brewery, Yoshiki decided to put everything, get everybody in, and see, it's possible to make great sake. I mean, it can be trial and error, but that mixture or cooperation of different kinds of yeast can produce very powerful, flavorful sake, right? So, okay, so when do you think it's going to come out?
I don't know.
You don't know yet? Yeah, so, well, it sounds like you have another long-term project. You don't have to rush.
Yeah.
Rather than having rushed products, we all want to taste the complete, like, very interesting new products. So we can wait and you can keep us posted.
Yeah, yeah.
So, by the way, the Japanese sake market is still shrinking due to the aging population, increase in competitive products and other reasons that I mentioned earlier, but the sake exports have been record high in recent years, thanks to innovative producers like Takeno Shuzo, like you. And how do you predict the future of sake in the domestic and global markets?
The world population grows, more and more people will want to try sake. This summer, I went to France, Spain, Germany, Switzerland, India, Vietnam, and Malaysia, and all the places were very interesting. So good restaurant and good person. So very interesting culture, so very energetic. So also the number of people around the world who are thinking about and are making sake is increasing. We also believe that in the future we can brew sake together with people all over the world.
Right. So yeah, that's interesting. I think thanks to the movement of craft beer and craft everything, and people started to discover what it's been traditional can go beyond. Like that's exactly what you're doing at your brewery with many other future products.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hope I can see your products in New York market, American market, everywhere in the world, because I think sake needs to be paid attention to, just as delicious products that can be compared with wine or the sake, traditional sake. But sake is, it's not just a beverage, right?
Yeah, so, of course.
Yeah. Okay, so what are your plans and dreams?
I will deliver peace to the world with sake.
We need that, especially now. we need a good sake to drink to have a peaceful conversation, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Great. So, so where can we find your updates online and on social media? And also products, where we can find your products?
Instagram and internet from Breeze and Salt. So if you want to come, of course, I'm waiting for you. It would be nice,
Right, and I'm sure if we visit, then there will be secrets discovered in person.
Yeah.
Right. So the listeners, the website is, has nothing to do with Takenoshizo name, but it's Yasakatsuru. It's yasakatsuru.co.jp. And Instagram, the same, Yasakatsuru, yasakatsuru, Yasakatsuru. So, yes, I've been hearing about your great products and your unique efforts. So please keep going and please keep us posted.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Right. So thank you so much for joining us today. And it's late at night in Japan. So thank you, Yoshiki. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@theheritageradionetwork.org or kikotayama.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Amin Spenjan, and we'll take a winter break for the next few weeks. So I will see you in the new year. And thanks for listening. I'll have a wonderful holiday and a new year. This episode of Japanese was made possible with the support of Dasai. Dasai supports HRN's creative educational reporting and storytelling that drives conversations to empower, educate, and entertain through food-focused podcasts and world-class education programs. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.